Welcome to the China Flexpat Podcast.
I am a veteran of China of 18 years. I'm originally from St. Louis, but currently am the business owner of Clean Energy Associates. I'm also a father of four girls, all who were born in Shanghai. But on a personal level, I'm an avid outdoorsman. I love going climbing and hiking. I don't have too many chances to do that in China. But I'm extremely passionate about the outdoors, the environment, renewable energy. And I definitely am very passionate about how China can really help to avoid climate change. I've been very fortunate to be a part of the solar energy and energy storage industries, which I've been deeply involved with the solar supply chain that's enabling that change and helping to prevent climate change from happening. I'd never been to China before the summer of before 2002, but that summer before going to business school, I traveled to 9 different countries in Southeast Asia and absolutely loved it. I said, I have to come back to Asia. I saw Chinese influence in pretty much every country I went to. It wasn't really until I made a decision going back to business school, I said, I absolutely have to come to China. And so I took a trip to China itself in December 2001. At that point in time, we had a school-sponsored trip to Shanghai and Hong Kong. And then I decided to come a few days early, tacked on some travels to Beijing, met with 2 or 3 dozen companies, and absolutely loved the business climate. I love the personal involvement, excitement for the culture. And I just said, I absolutely have to commit my career to China. My time in China really started in 2002 for the summer and then full-time since 2003. So it's been 18 plus years in China. What does Clean Energy Associates do? And we are a global technical advisory company that provides comprehensive engineering solutions for both the solar PV and energy storage industries. In simple terms, we really help people buy solar and storage equipment. We then validate the quality in the factory by sending inspectors to see the products as they're manufactured. And then we also ensure that the products are installed properly in the field in certain countries, whether they're installed in a field or in a rooftop system. We help to solve problems that many don't see because we have such technical depth and expertise. We have a lot of asset owners of these systems who come to us after they've faced problems, or in some cases they've had fires or other kind of thermal events. And so we help to do the resolution of those outstanding issues.
Andy, it's so cool to have you on the China Flexpat podcast as the first entrepreneur on our leadership series. What were the biggest challenges that you faced building the company? And how did you react to these? How did you solve them?
I would describe there are kind of 3 distinct phases of our business. So first and foremost, a startup phase happened in 2008. The first few years, I really had no clue what I was doing. I really had no idea about how to build a business. I was not an experienced entrepreneur. I had made a leap of faith in 2008 when the overall global market was at its peak and when the solar market was also peaking. 2008, the world seemed great and nothing would go wrong, but I literally stepped out into the cusp of the a very extreme global financial crisis. I spent the first few months just completely overwhelmed with just all the massive changes in the market. I realized that the opportunity I thought that existed did not. Everyone was in the panic and trying to buy at lower pricing. The products that we had seen in the market at a peak in 2008 all of a sudden dropped by 10, 20, then 30% in a very short period of time. I realized there was a fundamental theme of just, once again, having strong service with a set of clients who had trust and built a relationship with myself and with the company. I pretty much had to make ends meet, and those first 2 years were a struggle. I think the second phase of the business really happened from 2012 to 2016. And that's where we saw some very rapid growth, but it was probably unsustained growth. We had a lot of clients who would come to us, we'd solve a problem, and then we'd move on to something else. Or they saw that we made a lot of helpful introductions and they said, goodbye, we're going to take this elsewhere and do this ourselves. And I realized that was not a type of consulting model, was not sustainable and didn't really lead to a long repeat client basis. So during the second phase, I really pivoted the business model to really focus on repeat client relationships. I changed how we contracted with different entities. I focused on trying to build at least an initial skeleton crew. We grew from 5 to 7 folks all the way up to 50 in a very short period of time. So it was a very dynamic phase, but a completely different set of challenges as we entered to kind of the mainstream technical advisory capacity. And then the third phase, which is what I really defined as hypergrowth, is really from 2017 until now. And that's really where I focused on really building a clear culture, creating an executive team where we had an aligned sense of purpose and core values, focused on five core objectives on an annual basis, or five core priorities, reassessed those priorities and our progress every quarter, defined clear metrics, built sustainable processes and systems. We installed an ERP. We did a lot of other things that I would say were the system, technology, and process level that allowed us to be a sustainable long-term company. When I say hypergrowth, a couple of years we're at 60%+ growth. Our plan in 2020 completely changed when COVID happened. We actually did grow through COVID, but it was a challenge, and we did have to make some adjustments. We were very excited to see coming out of COVID. I would define our growth trajectory as being very strong in 2021. That's clearly something that still defines the third phase of CA's growth, which is really driven on culture, team, and aligned sense of objectives and purpose.
Andy, I am German, and I work with a lot of German engineers. The leaders I see there, they are mainly operation manager types, how to build something. Before I came to China, I was working for American services companies, so I was learning how to sell. How would you describe your leadership style?
I would describe my style as a flexible problem solver who's very entrepreneurial and innovative. My deeper functional capability is really around sales and marketing. And I've historically had more background in sales, marketing, and business development. I've also had a good sense of really listening to customers' needs and trying to help solve some of their biggest challenges. I think that's really what's allowed CA to succeed as a company, is that we've really taken a solution-oriented approach. So at the first start stage, I was extremely focused on just survival. I wanted to have a sustainable long-term business and forge my own path. So I had to be a little more innovative and entrepreneurial, creative around those first couple of years. The second phase, I was definitely much more engaged with customers, really trying to listen to understand what their needs were, how to make them have a wow experience. And then I think the third phase, I recognize my biggest weakness is about systems and processes. So I had to pivot and really focus on leadership. My leadership style is very embracing to everyone's skills and capabilities and really trying to pair the gaps in the team. I knew my biggest gap was on the process side. So that's why I hired a set of engineers and process-oriented leaders who could really build the processes throughout the company. And I just got out of the way. I've always taken this approach to say I'd rather bring on bright folks that are much, much more intelligent than myself, but allow them the opportunity to expand and run with something. So I'd say from that standpoint, I'm very happy to delegate and get out of the weeds. But once again, you know, part of my leadership style is the fact that I've been adaptive and adjusted at various points in time. While at the earlier stage, I was doing every single function of the company, I had to micromanage every facet. I then had to adjust later and say, okay, I can no longer be a micromanager. I have to let others run with it, and I care about their success and just allowing them to just follow the broader general direction.
So is there something you would have liked to learn before you started out that journey?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd say the biggest area of learning that I failed to really accomplish early on was really about how to recruit in a systemic, scalable way. I think that I was very strong at convincing folks of, you know, the great deeper sense of purpose of our industry and our company, but I did not invest in the process around hiring and recruiting. And I was also very inexperienced in really dealing with external search firms or as we seek many different channels to hire talent. But one of the things I did fail to do is really hire other leaders. And so that's where I definitely made mistakes really in this mid-growth area from 2013 to 2016. I brought on various leaders who did not truly embrace the culture we had. If I had one thing to do it over again, I would have absolutely spent more time on the culture building first, then focusing on a recruiting system that aligned with that.
How do you do that now? How do you recruit your team and how do you get them to be the leader which kind of lives in the culture which you built, and how do you get them to stay and to grow?
There's a few key metrics of that. So first is the recruitment, and then the second part is retention, and I think the third part is culture building, which is the foundation of both of those. First, in terms of the recruitment part of the process, We absolutely follow a much more rigid process, and it's fairly exhaustive. We're not trying to make it overly onerous, but I think it's extremely important, the age-old saying of hire slow, fire fast, really taking a slow, methodical approach to how one gets to know a candidate, make sure that the roles and responsibilities are aligned, make sure there's great alignment of the culture, make sure they understand the culture, encourage them to do some research on their own, and then see how they handle different situational interviews. The other aspect of hiring is also ensuring that you have the right set of candidates. And so until we gained the scale, and I would say really into the third stage of our company's growth in 2017 and 18, we started to expand from 50 or 60, close to 70, 80 on 100. Then we started to be known a little bit more in the industry, and we were getting a lot more inbound inquiries from different folks. We also changed our marketing organization and put a lot more content on our website and various channels, so a lot of folks could understand our company culture before they even came to us. So it was more or less a self-selection process, because we're not the best spot for everyone. You know, we are a company that embraces 8 core values, and those are really a key foundation for how we've grown and built our business. And that leads to the second point about retention. And that's where we have an ongoing set of systems and processes around team member engagement, really ensuring that we have the right dialogue between every leader and every individual. The number one cause for dissatisfaction is not the organization per se, but it's the individual leader. And so that's one of the key things that we really try to facilitate, is having more regular dialogue rather than having one big annual review process, to having more short iterative quarterly feedback sessions of just 30 minutes each. Automated that process through our business intelligence team. And that's extremely important, that we have a lot of tools and automation that helps to support different team members interacting with each other. Around that retention, that kind of is a reinforcing circle to the culture side. We kind of evaluate everyone on two metrics. We first look at their cultural alignment when they come in the company, and then we look at their performance and how they've performed well. But the reality is no one can be an A player or a top performer on day one. They have to understand the systems and processes. And so we've invested a lot of time on our onboarding methodology to really make sure that folks are very clear on their roles and responsibilities. They understand the different parts of the organization, and we move them from that potential A to an A player where they're performing well. They're very happy and satisfied and engaged in the work that they do, and all sides are really pleased to move forward.
And how many FlexPads have you hired in this growth phase?
If I look historically my career in China, both at Trina Solar as well as CEA, I would definitely say there's well over 75 full-time FlexPads through the course of my 18 years in China. I definitely had a lot of leeway when I went to Trina in terms of the type of team I could bring on board, and I saw the need for FlexPads. Unfortunately, I did not have a budget for any FlexPads. So the first set of FlexPads I hired were folks who either were abroad outside in China, wanted to come to China, or they were folks that were in China that were looking for a more international experience. And so it was a big stretch to hire someone who had worked at an investment bank and had incredible credentials on the finance side to come over and take a job for as little as, you know, $1,000 a month. But effectively, that's what we did. The first few hires had come from consulting and investment banking, but they were looking for a different experience. They wanted to come to China. They believed in what was happening in renewable energy. And those first few folks I still keep in touch with from 15 plus years ago. One's going off to set up his own company. Another one went off and is an executive at one of the larger developers. And many others are successful in their own rights. But I really invested in individuals and really tried to convince them that by joining a platform and being part of a growth process and a company building process, they would get a very rich experience well beyond just what a lower paycheck provided. Those first few years were very tough because we were very bootstrapped. My team of FlexPads helped to establish Trina Solar from just being a Chinese, very locally run Chinese company to being much more an international company. And that helped us a great deal. As I fast forwarded on to CEA over the last 13 years, we definitely have had a lot of folks who've kind of come and evolved with us. And I would definitely describe the first two phases of their company history as not having as strong of a tenure around investment in the culture. So we did have some folks come and go. There are certain folks in the FlexPad community who also had reasons to go back to their home countries. But right now we have 9 on our team, ranging from the US to Serbia, Slovakia, Peru, and the Netherlands. Just had someone in our office interviewing today. So we are very eager to listen to anyone else who's listening and has interest. The goal is really to find someone who is aligned with our culture and who really is excited for the opportunity to grow and build the renewable energy industry. And that's what we're doing at Clean Energy Associates. It does require a little more time and attention, but once again, we're also very flexible on the working hours and letting folks come in when they need to, because we just care about the results.
What is the value a FlexPad brings in this case? And have you tried to get the same value from Chinese or also from Haigui professionals coming back from several years living in the US or in Europe? Why are you still going for the FlexPads, and how can you justify higher cost of living, any kind of benefits, also higher salary, visa, and so on?
There's an immense value that FlexPads bring to our company. And our company is really an international company. We are not a Chinese company. And when I set up the company in 2008, that was very much was my bent. I said, even though at that time we had only incorporated in Hong Kong and then later China, I always knew we'd be a global company. And so now we actually have team members in 13 countries, entities in the US and elsewhere that really do reflect that international orientation. So there's a tremendous amount of value, just internal coordination. I mean, once again, our team members in half a dozen countries in Europe and Southeast Asia, you have Philippines, India, US and Canada, you know, they're really taking an active role in coordinating with our FlexPads that are in China, as certain parts of our business, namely the quality assurance piece, require a lot of interaction between our project operations team, account management team. And so once again, interacting with customers is extremely highly valued to have, multilingual FlexPads. And so there are many who are bilingual with English and Chinese, but there's others who also speak Spanish, other European languages, and that's extremely valuable. So we really look towards that diversity. In terms of hiring a Chinese for the same roles, I'd say there's a mix. You know, we do have Chinese in our core account management team that perform a very important role. They're also very used to dealing with customers, and they have knowledge and experience inside our team. And, you know, there's a good cooperation on both sides. That's why I really encourage bilingual foreigners to work with us. A lot of the FlexPads bring a more global perspective. They understand how business operates, but they also identify with our culture, and they see a high value add to working in a culture that really embraces them. And I'll say one of my observations in China the last several years, it's not been as easy to really find and recruit some of those folks. I've definitely seen a large percentage of foreigners who've left, even within my own personal circle. The obstacles to become a recent graduate then move to China have been substantial. The rules as they're written right now require that one to have 2 years of work experience in a certain field or area of expertise before coming to China. We have one South American national who's in the US right now and unable to come to China. And they've been applying for multi-months, just not had any success. We tried our channels, but it's been very challenging. Recruiting trends make it a little more difficult. Kudos to you to have this this channel, because I think it brings a lot of folks in the FlexPad community together. So I'm very happy to have the discussion.
And I'm really happy and hope that some of the folks out there will reach out to you and ask for a job, or at least to get some professional advice. Andy, I want to know from you if entrepreneurs talk to you who want to repeat what you built, which kind of advice would you give them?
But one of the things I say is just ask a lot of questions and seek advice from others who've gone down this path. So I've built, even before I joined these organizations, I connected with other entrepreneurs, asked a lot of questions, and took a lot of notes and studied mistakes from others. And that's what I think allowed me to succeed, although it took me a lot longer than I thought. But one of the biggest pieces of advice to anyone who's trying to set up a business in China is I would clearly understand how are you different from other local Chinese that are involved in setting up a similar business. If someone who is Chinese were to set up the exact same business model, the exact same plan, could you compete against them, and how do you do that? The answer really varies based on what industry and the type of service you're providing. But you know, the differentiation can really vary based on the business model, the relationships you bring to bear, the experience set, or the value creation. But once again, the absolute wrong way to go is to say, I want to focus on being a lower price or do something that's just not suited for what a FlexPad can do. And that's where I really try to focus on how do I create value that one can't necessarily obtain just by dealing with someone who's in China. So I had to have my local skills be just as strong as a local native Chinese. And in my case, once again, the language skills are absolutely crucial. And my first role or two, when I first took a job at Dell Computer, I was the only foreigner in a 900 person sales force. And so I was in a sink or swim environment. I had to learn the language and I had to do it within 6 months. Otherwise, if I hit my sales quota, I'd be kicked out. So I knew that learning the language was an absolute requirement back in 2001 on my first trip to China. And then when I joined Dell in 2003, I went down that path. But I think the other piece is just also having the survival skills of just knowing what it's like to get by on very little and just have a single hard charging perspective on what it takes to succeed. Anyone who comes to China just has to know how difficult it is just even working for a company, let alone starting your own company. Once again, in the end, I was able to succeed, and I think many others can as well. The mindset of a success-oriented entrepreneur is absolutely crucial to survive.
Andy, I really like talking to you because this challenge between the German engineer and the American marketing guy, this is something that I live myself all the time. And I really love working with people who are very clever and very dedicated and who are very process oriented. But I think I got the same kind of talent like you to say, I focus more on the business, on the culture, on how to make stuff succeed. And then surround myself with people who can fill all the gaps. Our audience, they should learn from people like you. If they want to run a company, if they want to go into a leadership position, they cannot fill all the gaps by themselves. They cannot be a micromanager. They have to learn from others. And this is great learning today. I would recommend everyone in the audience just to reach out to Andy and ask for help, like he said.
Absolutely. More than happy to talk to folks. I'm very responsive to LinkedIn.
Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show. 谢谢,再见.
Excellent. 再见.
Thank you for being part of China FlexPod community. Visit our website at chinaflexpod.com and follow us on LinkedIn. Goodbye and 再见.